content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Katie Neuhauser for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Religion News Service. Our first article is called Pope Leo XIV Calls for Rule of Law and Respect for Human Rights After U.S. Captures Maduro. Closing his weekly Anglicus prayer on Sunday, January 4th, Pope Leo XIV addressed the United States' arrest of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on Saturday, expressing concern for Venezuelans and calling for the Venezuelan Constitution to be respected. Quoting, "The good of the beloved Venezuelan people must prevail over every other consideration," the Pope said, according to Vatican News, the Catholic Church's official news agency. He urged the world to guarantee, quote, "the sovereignty of the country, ensuring the rule of law enshrined in the Constitution, respecting the human and civil rights of each and every person, and working together to build a peaceful future of collaboration, stability, and harmony, with special attention to the poorest who are suffering because of the difficult economic situation." The Vatican also relayed a statement from Venezuela's Catholic bishops, who asked God, quote, "to grant all Venezuelans serenity, wisdom, and strength. We stand in solidarity with those who were injured and with the families of those who died. Let us persevere in prayer for the unity of our people." On December 2nd, talking to reporters on the papal plane as he returned from his visit to Turkey and Lebanon, the Pope raised the question of a U.S. invasion of Venezuela as U.S. Navy warships were gathered in the Caribbean. Quoting, "It is better to look for ways of dialogue, even pressure, economic pressure," the pontiff said, "but seeking another way to bring about change if that is what they decide to do in the United States." In the United States, few religious leaders have spoken out about the Trump administration's actions in Venezuela. People celebrate after President Donald Trump announced Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro had been captured and flown out of the country. Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham, who heads the humanitarian aid organization Samaritan's Purse, wrote on X on Saturday morning, "I'm sure the people of Venezuela are breathing a huge sigh of relief that this evil dictator, Nicolas Maduro, is gone. Incredible work by our brave military who executed this strategic mission last night." Graham praised President Donald Trump as a president who doesn't just talk, but takes action, adding, "Pray for President Donald Trump and his team to have wisdom from God as they assess what the next steps need to be." The evangelical Christian leader ended his post with a hashtag, "Peace through strength." But on a weekend when many leaders were recovering from the busy Christmas season and the administration's plans were hazy, few other pastors of note remarked on the nighttime raid that captured Maduro and sent the socialist strongman to New York to stand trial. Pax Christi USA, a Catholic organization that advocates for peace, cited Leo's early December comments in a statement on Saturday that was critical of the Trump administration in the wake of the attack. The organization urged the U.S. bishops to utilize their religious authority to denounce these acts against Venezuela and to engage in dialogue to rethink and reorder our national priorities. With some notable exceptions, the Catholic Church has had a different relationship with the Venezuelan government since Maduro, who was raised Catholic, became president in 2013. As the economy worsened, as economic mismanagement and foreign sanctions took their toll, the Venezuelan bishops and local Catholic pastors have spoken out against the regime, demanding the release of political prisoners. On December 10th, Cardinal Balthazar Porras, the retired Archbishop of Caracas, was headed for Madrid when Venezuelan authorities prevented him from boarding his plane and confiscated his passport. In their Christmas message issued December 20th, the Venezuelan bishops quoted Porras, urging Venezuelans, quote, not to surrender in despair, but to have the courage to anchor ourselves in faith. In October, a mass celebrating the canonization of two Venezuelan saints, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, who served as apostolic nuncio in Venezuela from 2009 to 2003, protested the opposition of the Maduro regime. Maduro has appealed in recent months to evangelical Christians in Venezuela after years of clamping down on religious life. In 2023, he created two programs that showered the country's Protestant pastors with money and other support, from musical equipment to building materials. He beefed up the payouts as elections approached in summer of 2024. About a third of Venezuelans identify as evangelicals. In November, as Trump began his campaign to eject Maduro from power, the Venezuelan president organized a Prayer for Peace service, broadcasting it live from the Miraflores Presidential Palace. "Let the bells of peace ring, not the drums of war," quoted Maduro. Victor Maldonado, a Venezuelan political scientist, told the Spanish-language Catholic news agency ACI Prensa that Maduro's attempts to warm relations with his country's evangelicals were not only aimed at gaining voters, but at delegitimizing the Catholic faith. On Saturday, the Executive Directorate of the Evangelical Council of Venezuela issued a statement, quote, "In light of recent events that have impacted our nation," the leader said, "we pray for peace in the country and for a true and lasting transformation that honors justice, truth, and the dignity of every citizen." The group urged its members not to be overcome by fear or anxiety. To that end, it encouraged them to limit their exposure to social media and the constant flow of information. "We suggest setting aside a moment each day to stay informed and dedicating the rest of the time to prayer, fraternal communion, service, and other activities that build the well-being of our families and promote the kingdom of God." Again, that article was entitled "Pope Leo XIV Calls for Rule of Law and Respect for Human Rights After U.S. Captures Maduro." The author of that article was Paul O'Donnell. Our next article is entitled "Two Events Remember the Fifth Anniversary of the January 6th Riot, Appealing to Two Divine Truths." It's written by Jack Jenkins, and the dateline is in Washington. Two groups with decidedly differing views of the January 6, 2021 attacks on the U.S. Capitol marked the fifth anniversary of the day's events on Tuesday, both appealing to what they argued were divine truths. On Tuesday morning, at a vigil at Luther Place Memorial Church, a historic evangelical Lutheran church in America congregation in downtown Washington, a dozen or so clergy assembled as the church's pastor, the Reverend Karen Brau, recounted the story of the vigil held 5 years before. At the time, thousands of supporters of President Donald Trump rallied in Washington to protest, insisting the 2020 election was stolen, a false claim. "Two Trump supporters marched into the prayer circle," Brau recalled, "and mockingly reenacted the murder of George Floyd. This unjust and harsh interruption was designed to pull our attention away from the prayerful space we were inhabiting," Brau said, adding, "it did not work." The theme of this year's vigil was truth-telling, Bra told Religion News Service, an idea she traced to Scripture. As we were bearing witness here that first time in 2021, we were part of a truth that was happening, said the pastor. I think the ongoing truth-telling, being able to, in some ways, hold the narrative for what is our experience and rooting that in God's love and justice, it remains relevant and necessary. Later on Tuesday, about 75 people who participated in the Capitol attack and their supporters gathered at the Ellipse, agreeing on the south side of the White House, where Trump delivered his speech before the attack 5 years earlier. Cindy Young, who was convicted of 4 misdemeanors for actions she took at the Capitol before being pardoned last year by Trump, along with some 1,500 other rioters, told the crowd their attacks 5 years ago were righteous. We were chosen by God to lead this nation, this war against evil forces of our government, she said. Several speakers at the Luther Place event noted that January 6th, coincides with Epiphany, the remembrance of the visit recounted in the New Testament's Gospel of Matthew of the 3 Magi, or wise men, to the newborn Jesus. While none of the speakers mentioned Trump by name, many likened modern-day political powers to Herod, the king who, according to Matthew, asks the Magi to report back to him on Jesus' whereabouts in order to kill him. Instead, says the gospel, they return to their country by another route. Vicar Jenny Alexander Allen, who serves an ELCA church in Bowie, Maryland, celebrated the example of the Magi and their quiet invitation to bear witness. 5 years ago, when this city trembled and truth was pushed toward erasure, many of us felt this same stirring, Alexander Allen said. And now, as powers and principalities still work to soften the edges of that day, to draw us back into Herod's orbit with its familiar distortions, that summons rises again among us. It calls us to remember with clarity, to resist the slow drift toward forgetting, to stay awake to the story. Bishop Phil Hirsch, the ELCA's leader in Washington, said he hoped the event was a Christian example of operating as a conscience to the government, saying, "We're compelled to speak by the government's recent actions." The Reverend Nichelle Carter Peterson, an associate minister at nearby Metropolitan AME Church, also spoke. Hers was one of at least 4 houses of worship in Washington whose signs were destroyed by members of the extremist group Proud Boys in the days before January 6th. Gracious God, we are here on a day when there is a convergence of celebration of the Epiphany and of mourning the 5th anniversary of the January 6th insurrection, Carter Peterson said. We come together remembering the gift of God made real in Jesus Christ amid all the turmoil and changes of the world. Your love is steadfast and your grace never fails. After Metropolitan AME's Black Lives Matter banner was torn down 5 years ago, the church successfully sued Proud Boys and was awarded the rights to the group's logo. The church now sells T-shirts emblazoned with the logo alongside the slogan, Black Lives Matter. Faith was no less present at the Ellipse, where a speaker named Ben Pollock repeatedly held a Bible aloft to cheers. In an interview with RNS, Pollock said 2 of his children had served time in prison for their actions at the Capitol 5 years ago, and that he had been preaching in prisons for years. He told RNS, "There was an inner small voice that called us to the Capitol that day. It was about truth, and it's a truth that'll set you free." The Bible that Pollock carried was the God Bless the USA Bible, a version that includes the Declaration of Independence and other U.S. historical documents, along with the Christian scriptures. The edition, inspired by country singer Lee Greenwood's song of the same name, was endorsed by Trump when it was published in 2024, and the president has made money off of its sale. Quoting, "Donald Trump promoted this because at one point in America, we all could say a prayer together, the Lord's Prayer," Pollock said. It would be in unison. It didn't matter what church you were belonging to. You knew that the Lord's Prayer was out of this Bible. It did deliver us from evil, and it still will deliver us from evil if we'll pray it. Earlier in the day, the Trump administration published a website defending the president and those convicted of crimes at the Capitol 5 years ago, accusing Democrats of having reversed reality about January 6th. The site refers to participants in the Capitol attacks as peaceful demonstrators, despite widely documented assaults on U.S. Capitol officers that day. After the rally, many at the Ellipse marched off toward the U.S. Capitol, as some had 5 years earlier. Marching with them was Enrico Tarrio, the one-time head of the Proud Boys, who was convicted of tearing churches' Black Lives Matter signs down in 2021, and who was one of several Proud Boys convicted of seditious conspiracy in the attack on the Capitol. Torero was granted a full pardon, while five other Proud Boys received commuted sentences from Trump. In his remarks, Torero said he did not wish violence on those he felt wronged him, but he repeatedly called for retribution against his perceived enemies, including lawmakers, certain Department of Justice officials, and members of the press. The group was heckled along the two-mile route by counter-protesters who called the marchers Nazis and traitors and accused them of committing treason. The marchers shouted insults back, sometimes bursting into chants of USA. When the marchers arrived at the Capitol, they gathered under a tree and made plans to lay flowers around the building to remember Ashley Babbitt, who was shot and killed by police while participating in the Capitol attack. Attendees held photos of Babbitt, whose mother had addressed the crowd at the Ellipse and who has been cast as a martyr by some on the political right. After singing Proud to be an American, the group asked Pollock to lead it in prayer. As members of his group and counter-protesters continued to heckle another one nearby, Pollock called for unity, then attempted to lead the crowd in the Lord's Prayer, but stopped abruptly at the line, "Deliver us from evil." "We can't fight the evil in that building right there," he said, pointing to the Capitol, "but God can. God can." A man standing next to him responded, referring to God, "He used us on January 6th, and he's going to use us again." Again, that article was entitled, "To Events Remember the Fifth Anniversary of the January 6th Riot, Appealing to Two Divine Truths." And the author was Jack Jenkins. Our next article is entitled, "Liberal Christian Denominations Condemn U.S. Actions in Venezuela, Call for Peace." This author is Yonat Shimran. And it begins, 4 days after the U.S. military seized Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife in a strike on Caracas that took nearly everyone by surprise, liberal Christian denominations have begun to criticize the raid. The bishops of the United Methodist Church on Wednesday, January 7th, issued a statement condemning all acts of violence, military aggression, and violations of national sovereignty, and urging its members to pray for the Venezuelan people. The United Methodist Church does not have churches in Venezuela, a mostly Catholic country with growing numbers of Protestants and other faiths, but it does have autonomous Methodist churches. In the letter, the United Methodist bishops pointed to their social principles that oppose war and violence. It did not mention the deposed Venezuelan leader by name. Neither did it mention President Donald Trump, who ordered the raid that extracted Maduro from the country and brought him to a New York City jail. On Tuesday, he pleaded not guilty to federal drug and weapons charges. The Episcopal Church was quicker to respond. An action alert released Saturday, the same day as the raid, by its Office of Government Relations, condemned the use of military force aimed at disrupting a non-eminent, uncertain military threat. It also called on Congress to investigate the operation, which it said marks a striking and unprecedented escalation of conflict. The Episcopal Church has more skin in the game. The denomination has a diocese in Venezuela with 17 congregations and several more missions. The diocese provisional bishop, Cristobal Olmedo León Lozano, is stationed in Ecuador. The Episcopal Church called for an investigation and accountability, first because of our 2009 resolution condemning the first use of armed force in the form of a preventative or preemptive strike that is aimed at disrupting a non-imminent, uncertain military threat, said Rebecca Linder Blackley, chief of public policy and witness for the Episcopal Church. Also, we are firm supporters of the United Nations, and this operation lacked legal authorization under international law per the UN Charter. Additionally, there was no congressional authorization for the use of military force, nor advance notice to all required members of Congress. The Reverend Canon David Uola Chavez, the Episcopal Church's partnership officer for Latin America and the Caribbean, said he has spoken via phone with the provisional bishop and has been assured that no church members have been injured so far. From what I understand, everyone is safe, Chavez told RNS. There is this sort of ambiguity around what is actually taking place. There's sort of a nervous calm at this stage. Secretary of State Marco Rubio told members of Congress on Wednesday that the Trump administration has plans for a prolonged mission in the country, and that included taking control of its vast oil reserves. Many Venezuelan migrants to the U.S. celebrated Maduro's capture. Political and economic insecurity under Maduro's authoritarian rule has led to an exodus of some 7.9 million Venezuelans as of December 2024, according to the Migration Policy Institute. As of 2023, some 770,000 Venezuelan immigrants had entered the U.S. In 2021, the Biden administration designated Venezuela for temporary protected status, which grants legal immigration status to people fleeing countries facing armed conflict or humanitarian crises. Trump ended that program last year. But inside the country, some have described an uneasy quiet and deep fears about what might come next. Chavez said he and leaders in the Episcopal Church, Church's province that covers Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, the Dominican Republic, and Honduras are talking about how to better support Venezuelans who are leaving via its long western border with Colombia. How do we partner for the sake of our migrating neighbors that are coming into not only our province, but throughout the region, Chavez said. Other liberal Protestant denominations have also condemned the U.S. action. The United Church of Christ and the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, released a joint statement condemning the attack, saying it posed a troubling pattern of unlawful U.S. military activity, including the December 25, 2025, anti-strikes in Nigeria. The World Council of Churches also condemned the raid and Maduro's capture, saying the U.S. actions constituted stunningly flagrant violations of international law. And Pope Leo XIV voiced deep concern over the situation. The good of the beloved Venezuelan people must prevail over every other consideration, he said in a Sunday address, with an appeal to the end of the violence and guarantee the country's sovereignty. And for our final article, the title is For Sikhs, As for New York City, Mandami's Inauguration Holds Spiritual Promise. And this is by Simranjeet Singh. From the beginning of his campaign, Zoran Mamdani's run for mayor of New York has been about overcoming our doubts about what is possible. So it was on that eve of his inauguration, I sat in the Buffalo airport in a massive blizzard, my flight back to New York delayed and finally canceled. Put on the first flight out in the morning. By the time I made it to New York City, I rushed to City Hall, not having time to locate anyone to come with me, or possibly someone who had been invited who might save me a seat near the front. Which is how I ended up in the third row on the west side of City Hall. As soon as I walked in, I saw a Muslim friend from Brooklyn who, last seen, had been recording a video of me in November as I ran the New York City Marathon while carrying a Zohran poster. Next, I saw some Sikh friends from Manhattan, two rows ahead of me. Then I started seeing friends everywhere. It was like a reunion, but at City Hall, and for a historic celebration. One of the most touching conversations I had was with a Sikh friend who had worked on Mamdani's campaign. I told him how moving it had been to see him pour his heart into something he believed in. When he first started, I said, "This moment must have felt unimaginable." "That's exactly why I decided to do this in the first place," he replied, "because it was so unimaginable." Politics are often described as a series of compromises, but Mamdani's campaign felt like a chance to live and work with integrity. Even if the hoped-for outcome seemed unlikely, it was still worth trying. The sheer earnestness of his words gave me goosebumps. I was reminded that some of the people I admire most, including some of Sikh's religious founders, were also political revolutionaries who insisted that the dignity of all people is not worth compromising. Though this should not be a radical idea, their example in pursuing it was almost superhuman. They seemed to set impossible standards that everyday people couldn't actually achieve. But this conversation with my Sikh friend reminded me that these goals are not impossible. People with the required integrity are all around us. We only have to open our eyes to notice and appreciate them. It was a profound spiritual moment. Who would have thought I'd have one of those on the steps of City Hall? Whoever says that God is the ultimate truth will be blessed, quoted U.S. Republican Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When she said that, I got goosebumps again. It was such a special moment. I came away with a deep appreciation for the people in my own country, those who are continuing to teach me and inspire me through their daily example of living with integrity. Those who are showing up despite the conditions and despite the prospects, knowing in their hearts that progress doesn't necessitate compromise. Many at the inauguration worked tirelessly to help create a new vision and a new future for our community. I'm hopeful about what's to come in the future, not just in New York, but in our political structures across the country that are so badly in need of reform and repair. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Katie Neuhauser, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.